Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your hosts, Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
The best guests, the best insight.
Lofton with his team down by two, to the corner, Caputo! No good! And it's over! St. Louis is going dancing!
All backed by over 40 combined years of covering the biggest events in St. Louis sports.
Blues have the puck. Thomas off the wall. Shoots, and it's in. They score! It's the St. Louisan, Pat Maroon. Bring out the Zamboni. Pat Maroon just put the city on his shoulders, and he saves them to the conference finals.
Now, here are Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoin on 590 The Fan KFNS and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Martin Kilcoin in studio, Charles Tuna Edwards in studio. We're here till 12 o'clock, and let's not bury the lead. A legend passed away yesterday. Handsome Harley Race, one of the great wrestlers of all time, is no longer with us. God bless.
And in talking about him on TV, I was quoting Wikipedia because he was a 9-time world champion, but there's different, of course, different leagues, allegiances. And the great Larry Nickel chimed in on Twitter correcting me, and I said, pal, go to Wikipedia, the 9-time champion. But yes, one of the legends in wrestling.
When I think of him, I think of Cowboy Bob Ellis, Pat O'Connor, Buddy Rogers.
Dick the Bruiser.
The St. Louis house where wrestling was made, was created famous down on off of Jefferson. Oh, yeah.
Did you go to back in the day, like even
my
later wrestling?
My mother took me as a little kid.
Like wrestling at the Chase later? Did you go to those events?
Yeah, this was before wrestling
before
at
that.
The Chase, yeah.
And Martin, I'm thinking Harley Race, 76 years old.
Yeah, you probably ran around the same circles.
I got a chance to meet him, I took a photo with him, but my mother used to
he
take
He said
us
he
to
grew
the,
up listening to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever go to wrestling at the Chase, Frank?
Yes. Yeah.
So contemporary is what you're saying.
To this day,
Barry Matichuk.
One of the 10 best sporting events I've ever attended, Freedom Hall, Hulk Hogan, the Iron Sheik, 20,000 people sitting front row. It was the greatest moment ever. It was
Who was your favorite type wrestler like that? Because that was all, part of that was fixed.
I liked Macho Man Savage mainly because of his wife, the Miss Elizabeth.
Can I tell you something? Never been to a wrestling match. Like a professional wrestling, like the WWE or back.
Not even in your small markets did you ever?
Oh, I mean, I'm trying to think if there was a story here or there, like the local club. But on, you know, the big stage here when they would come through town. And as a kid, wasn't taken to wrestling at the Chase. So I feel like I was denied that in my childhood. I remember like Rowdy Piper. We used to talk about all those guys in the Hulkster.
Oh, boy, was he good.
But I wasn't that into it. I mean, Joe Roderick's got the trading cards out right now.
Well, yeah. In the Hulk Hogan era, I actually got a chance to go to, I call it a rehearsal. And everything is choreographed. Time, when they jump off the rope. But when I was a little kid, they had what they called Texas wrestling, which was actually real wrestling. But back in the day when Harley Race and those guys were wrestling, it wasn't that much stage. But they were always blood pills in their mouth to bleed. The ratings right now for wrestling, if you go on Nielsen, are always in the top 10 on cable every week.
You know, I did a banquet at a casino about 2 years ago with Harley Race, and he could barely move and barely walk. And so last night I'm looking at this video. I'm telling you, I don't know how the guy... I don't care if it's like fake or not. He's still smashing into bodies. He's still jumping off the ropes. And then these headbutts. That was his big move, headbutts.
Right.
No wonder he was, you know, a little bit slower at the end.
And what you described, Charlie, I think early on, is more in line with the MMA now.
Right.
They just kind of got in there and was like man on man, attack each other, beat them down any way you can. before it became more of a show.
Here's a name that came up with Harley Race was Rip Hawk. Remember Rip?
I do not.
So I'm going back. I know I'm
I do not know Rip Hawk either.
I remember Bob Wilson.
So do you care to confirm or deny
Bob Ellis?
The age on how close you were to this number?
No, I used to love, my favorite wrestler of all time was a guy named Buddy Rogers. And he used to strut on stage, and he had one figure move. He had called a figure four grapevine.
Figure four, oh yeah.
Figure four grapevine. But see, I'm going back before you guys. I was a little kid then.
So did you ever run into Harley when you guys were picking up your Social Security check? We're trying to narrow something down here. I think Frank is working on.
Yeah, 76 years old. All right. Let's.
How do you feel at 76? You feel youthful, don't you?
Well, first of all, I'm not 76.
Okay.
I'm not six. How did I get in this fix? No Strickland here. No hockey today. Oh. A star.
Actually, we're allowed to talk hockey.
Because he's out of the country, yeah. We can talk hockey.
You know what we should do, Brian, from here on out? Is we should just book, like, the greatest hockey guest possible. You know?
At 10:59 every Friday.
Yeah.
Cut his grass.
Or all week.
Yeah, just all week and just kind of take him off, you know?
You know, people will say, God, Andy, he just really comes off so arrogant. I'm like, it's just his shtick. And they always say, is it really? You sure? I think it's his shtick. That's Chuck Shy. You go way back.
Too. I go way back. I got history. Like Anthony Bonner says, I'm a wise man. That's right.
Yeah, Chuck does have a shtick. If you say greatest blues player of all time, he'll say, probably Tony McKechnie. He's kind of got a theme.
Christ Salvador.
Yes.
No, Salvador is my guy.
Yeah. All right. A little baseball last night. And, you know, I thought it was the most amazing thing is if he would have pitched the no-hitter, Jack Flaherty, it would have been the first one in St. Louis since 1983.
Who's in the last
Bob
guy?
Forrest, yeah.
Because Jimenez on the road, Bud Smith on the road.
That's a long drought.
The Bob Forrest one, I remember being in high school, and there was a team that wasn't very good. It was in September of 83, and my friend called and said, hey, we're going to the game tonight. You want to go? And I was like, I think I'll skip it. And of course, pitch is a no-hitter.
And not many people were there.
Probably a lot of people decided to skip that one.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a no-hitter? Been in the building for a no-hitter?
No.
How many did he have with the Cardinals?
Two. So,
tremendous guy.
Flaherty, who ended this drought of 12 starts without a victory, is 12, I think the number was. He was unbelievable in July, and now he starts off August like this, despite the fact he wasn't winning. So maybe we have the answer to the question we've asked for months. Who's your game one starter? If it works out that way, I mean, if he could be on the proper rest, it's got to be Jack Flaherty.
I mean, he's had five starts. The last five starts, he's given up a combined 4 earned runs. And I know right after his good friend Tyler Skaggs died, the Angels pitcher, he said, I'm going to go out and dedicate it to him. And then he had a couple of starts where he kind of imploded a little bit, and it was clear he was still emotionally distraught about his friend. But I'll tell you, after he got through that one, I think in San Francisco, he has been really good. And we always said there's no equation where they make the playoffs without Paul Goldschmidt being a great hitter.
Right.
I don't think you can win a division if Jack Flaherty's mediocre. With the rest of that rotation,
yeah.
And you look at the names and say potential, and he is only 23 years old. That might save their hide. And nobody's more excited than John Mozeliak saying, come on, Flaherty, get on a run here.
He went through a funk that some young players and pitchers do at a time. And I'm glad maybe that's out of the way. If that's out of the way, this is really, really needing. But this team is in first place, a soft first place. But let's see what happens the rest of the year.
Okay, so now manager Schilt, or very shortly, is going to have some really tough decisions to make. Now, the easiest one is going to be in left field. I mean, Tyler O'Neill's been fine, and the replacements besides Tyler O'Neill have been okay. But there's no doubt when Marcelo Zuna is healthy, he gets the spot. Where it gets really interesting is behind the plate. Now, Yadi's not close, but how do you kick Matt Wieters to the curb if he's got twice as many home runs? He's slugging 500. Yadi's slugging 368. How about this stat? Pitchers with Yadi, 4.68 ERA. Pitchers with Wieters, 3.31. Now, I'm not denying Yadi's the greatest, you know, we've had. But, boy, you cannot, like, just say, okay, Matt Wieters, you're going to play once every 8 games.
How about a home run every 13 at-bats?
Insane.
10 homers in 130 at-bats. What do you think career-wise? I was interested because they both have been pretty good hitters, not great.
Yeah.
Career home runs for Molina. Give me a number.
Let's see. 110?
150.
Okay.
It's a little higher than you thought. Yeah. Matt Wieters, 145.
Wow. And how about the number of at-bats for Molina to get there?
How about that, Hoff? Okay. As Martin scribbles, I didn't look at the number.
You guys have a script, everything printed up for you, you know.
Career home runs. No, I would like to know at-bats, but you cannot ice a guy like
Switch
Wieters.
Switch hitter, too, right?
Switch hitter.
Base on balls. Tremendous with base on balls. See?
Look at this guy over here. But
that's going to be a tougher. I mean,
because Yachty kind of makes all of his own decisions.
Yes.
He probably tells them.
He's the manager.
His little
Instagram.
Instagram kind of like got the ball rolling for the end of Mike Matheny.
Yeah, I think it opened the door.
Yeah.
For hey, if Yachty's against this guy or has issues with this guy, then maybe we start asking around the room. And there's no doubt what his status is down there. But you're Mike Schilt, and you're trying to win games. You can't take a guy like Matt Wieters, who's contributed, as you said, the ERA with the pitchers, and just throw him to the side. Molina's history speaks for itself, but this guy Wieters has contributed. We said the other day, who's been better than expected? And we mentioned him, and somebody mocked his batting average.
Yeah,
I don't care
please.
About his batting average. Matt Wieters has been way better than I thought.
Well, this is going to be Schulte's toughest decision as a major league manager. And it's going to happen in a few days.
Right, look at your lineup. On any given night, your left fielder is Ozuna, correct?
Right.
Yes.
Your center fielder is probably Fowler, but not for sure.
It could be a Fowler, Tyler O'Neill, Jose Martinez, three for two.
The three of them for two. I guess Munoz, if he hits, maybe plays a little bit. He's probably settling back into more of a bench guy. Who's your starting third baseman on any given night?
Matt Carpenter had two hits last night, and that's going to be his second toughest decision there.
If I'm Mike Schilt, hey, Mo, quit locking all these guys up.
Yeah, stop.
Yeah.
I think your third baseman is a combination of Edmund and Carpenter, right?
That's
And whoever hits
and
plays.
And possibly Munoz.
And whoever hits plays.
I mean, Munoz had two more hits last night.
I just think it's amazing that you're a first-place team. And who's your starting eight? Well, I know who my left fielder, my shortstop, my second base, and first base. My catcher, I know who he is, but I got a guy who's got to play behind him. Center field, right field, third base, it's kind of up for grabs.
At least we're not talking about Fowler like we did last season. At least he's making some type of contribution.
Oh, yeah, I mean, last season was beyond brutal.
Right, he's making some kind of contribution. This is going to be fun. The rest of the baseball season is fun. I'm going to look ahead. What happens if the Cardinals know they cannot make the playoffs? And the team comes in here, which could be that now. And a team comes in here that's going to be in the playoff and need a catcher. This may sound crazy, but the Cardinals entertain picking up a prospect to trade.
No more trades, Chuck. No more trades.
I know you can't trade him, but you move Yadier.
No,
any kind of way.
And he would have the ability to block anything.
I think the way the Wits feel, you know, because they feel bad about the Pujols thing not ending here. I think they're going to make sure.
But is that right? Is that loyalty? How far does that go from a business standpoint?
Well, just
standpoint?
Think how bad the Celtics did it with Bird, McHale, and Parrish.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of making moves at the end of their careers, they kept them,
right.
and they became a disaster right
That's
after
what
that.
I'm talking about.
But I think it's an interesting theory to sort of look deeper at with the organization, because with Albert, at some point, it became a money, like they kind of drew the line in the sand at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So you get with certain players, you say, all right, we'll go to a certain, and you just don't do it if it doesn't make sense. Haven't we criticized them for being overly clinical and analytical? And yet every once in a while, like Matt Carpenter, it's more of an emotional tie.
Mm-hmm.
Or like bringing Wainwright back, it was small dollars, it didn't matter. If he was terrible, they weren't going to owe him much money, it was safe. Matt Carpenter locked up longer term, that had to have been an emotional buy because there was no business reason to do it.
So Yadier is at $20 million, correct?
Is he one left? Is he now one left? I think he had one left, but then he was talking about playing an extra year, but they owe him one more year.
So we got two aging ball players that may not be able to
play. Is Molina only one more year?
I think he's one more year.
I thought it was two.
Well, that's good.
No, 2020 is his last contract.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think he's talked about how he wanted to play beyond that.
You know what's going to happen is he'll get off to a decent start and Mo will give him $40 million
next
year.
So next April, there'll be a press conference.
It'll be a Carpenter moment. Yeah.
It is weird that on occasion, I think with Molina, though, he was still playing, when they locked him up or extended him, he was still playing at a pretty high level.
Absolutely, yeah. But you just can't make that same mistake again.
How about Yadi's career batting average? For a guy who started as a horrible hitter, we know that he's not terribly fast.
270?
282.
Wow, that's Ozzie Smith's.
Isn't that crazy?
That is amazing.
282 for Molina, who's not a great runner, who early in his career looked to be a bad hitter. That is pretty impressive.
So now what happens here? Okay, so very shortly, Ozuna's going to be activated. Maybe, you know, he could play Saturday in Oakland. So Ravello goes down. Now what happens when Matt Carpenter is activated? And he had two hits last night. So who goes down then? Boy, who do you...
I mean, it'd have to be an infielder
Thomas.
Type. But I mean,
Thomas. Because
I mean, I guess the good thing is Munoz is an outfielder and an infielder, so he doesn't really qualify in one spot. But yeah, Lane.
And then Molina would be activated, and there would go
Kisner.
Yeah.
So some of it decides itself. I think it's more about once those guys are on the 25, how does Mike Shildt make out the lineup? Because if Carpenter is here, that's really weird for him to just be a bench guy. You know, a $20 million bench guy.
What happens if he gets in another funk again when he comes back?
Well, he's not going to be afforded that opportunity, by the way, to have a long funk.
At least Jose, like the other day, said, this was on Wednesday. We said, what's going on with Carpenter? He said, we'll reevaluate on Sunday, which bought them some more time. So I appreciate the fact, at least, they're not rubber stamping his return quickly.
Now, he didn't have a hit when he was in double-A either. He was, what, 0 for 15?
Yeah, but he got two hits last night.
Last night, I know.
So he was 0 for 19 going into last night, I believe.
That didn't bother me too much, he didn't get any hits in the minors. It didn't bother me
yet. Well, it bothers me if he's not barreling it up. I mean, you know, there's different ways you can go 0 for 4. And if you're striking out twice and hitting weak ground balls, that's not going to get you a trip to St. Louis.
Now, there was a video online last night where he took a walk. And I believe, I couldn't make it out, but the Albuquerque pitcher was sort of barking at him. And I think he was saying something like, are you serious? You're not swinging any of my stuff? Something. If you can find it by the end of the day, we got some time, where the Albuquerque pitcher apparently says something to him because he takes like four or five pitches.
How, Frank, a couple of weeks ago you had Andy Van Slyke on. He was talking about Bader's outfield play and his hitting. And he also mentioned Matt Carpenter. What did he, again, say about Matt Carpenter and his problems?
He wanted to swing his way out of it. He said instead of taking all the pitches. That's but I don't remember what he thought was wrong, because some players just can't lose
said,
it, right?
He thought
you
got to
go
player.
The other way, too. You can't consistently
when they do the shift.
He
talked about the stubbornness of hitting into the shift. When they're all over there on the right side and you just keep hitting it to them, that's stubbornness. But he also said stop taking so many pitches, which I think is the fan frustration. If a guy's 0 for 20... in a stretch where he's 0 for 20. But he's hit a couple of lineouts, a couple of fly balls. It feels different than somebody who's getting punched out on a taken third strike.
Just think if this shift thing was not vogue now in Major League Baseball. I'm not saying Matt Carpenter would be a 300 hitter, but he has been robbed a lot. That shift, nobody has been persecuted more by the shift than Matt Carpenter.
He's writing a book. If it weren't for the shift. But don't you have to lay some down? How about the double? Remember the bunt that turned into a double? Why not?
Wouldn't you do that like 100 times before the game? Just do that. Hit the ball to third base. I mean, bunt the ball to third base. I don't know. All right, let's break. Before we go to break, I want to tell you that our first segment was brought to you by our great friends at Worldwide Technology Raceway. We were there yesterday. The Indy cars were out there traveling 180, 190 miles an hour in anticipation of the Bomberito 500, which is coming August 24th, one of the best sports days in St. Louis. 40,000 people will be there. Go to the website of Worldwide Technology Raceway for more information about that great event. And Maryville sponsors the phone lines. If you'd like to be a part of the program, please join us and go to maryville.edu. When we come back, LeBron James has taken a lot of heat for being in the layup line and having a lot of fun on the bench. We'll have our thoughts on that when we come back.